Well, last week it has been confirmed that I am just a giant wimp. I always considered myself to be rather tough, one that could tolerate a large amount of pain. But I noticed my left shoulder has been really hurting. It gets pretty bad during certain movements. When I go to the gym with Devin and Hannah, I'll do some military presses or some dips. Really hurts. I was with Devin. I was getting some wood down an embankment. It was a long log, massive. Wasn't that big, but so I threw it up. I went to push one end up on the other, and that action I thought was going to drop me to my knees. Well, I went to the specialist this past week and had some x-rays taken, and the doctor said that I needed to do some simple exercises. It's these little rubber band, just little movements. And what has happened is my rotator cuff is just not as strong as the rest of my body. It's just not as strong as my shoulders. And also the bone that connects to the shoulder gets a little inflamed. So I need to ice it when it acts up, or I'll throw some heat, some Tiger Balm on it, kind of like that Bengay or Icy Hot stuff. But in other words, I'm just a giant wimp. I'm an overreactor. What's funny is I was concerned that it was going to be a lot worse. I was concerned rotator cuff, maybe an operation, surgery, because my shoulder really hurt at times. And I think many people tend to do the same type of thing in these situations. There's an ailment, something happens, uh-oh, cancer, or uh-oh, liver disease, or something's wrong, and I'm going to have to get a surgery. I remember when I had a kidney stone, I thought I was going to die. And that one really does hurt, but I'm serious. I was crawling on all fours, sweating like crazy, hitting the ground, and told Vicky, I think I'm going to die. And she says, I've seen this before. Yeah, her father went through it years ago. She goes, don't worry, honey, you're not going to die. You're just a big wimp. No, so we tend to overreact. Well, this morning we are going to see what Jesus says about the last days leading up to his second coming, and there will be no mistaking how bad those days will really be. Mark chapter 13, verses 14 through 23. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter. For in those days there will be tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or look, he is there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders and deceive, if possible, even the elect. But take heed, see, I have told you all things beforehand. What I'd like to do before we get into the text this morning is establish the time frame of this event. There are some differences on whether or not this event was to take place in the lifetime of his disciples, the 12 disciples, or if it was to take place in the future. I believe that Jesus is not telling his disciples that these things will happen in their lifetime, and this is why. What we must remember is that this context starts in verse 1. Jesus is teaching his disciples about the end times. The question that must be asked is, what is the big picture? What was the disciples asking? The disciples were asking Jesus when he is going to set up his kingdom. That was always and has always been on the forefront of their mind. They were always speaking, kingdom, is now the time for your kingdom? Who's going to be greatest in the kingdom? The Jews were always looking and thinking, kingdom. Well, how do we know this is true of this context? because this context starts with verse 1. It starts with this chapter, and it ends with this chapter. So if you would, look at verse 24, starting in verse 24, and we'll read through 27. But in those days, it's speaking of the tribulation. After that tribulation, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars of heaven will fall and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send his angels and gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest part of the earth to the farthest part of heaven. See, that's talking about kingdom. Well, if that's not enough, when you read Matthew 24 and 25, chapters 24 and 25, which is the same account, there is a lot more detail concerning the second coming, how he'll separate the goats from the sheep and how we will enter into the kingdom. Well, we won't, but those who are on earth during the tribulation enter into the kingdom. Last week I said that many of the things that Jesus described starting during the life of the disciples and is still happening. Last week when we looked at the verses, when it says, when will these things take place? Well, these things will start in the life of the disciples, remember? And we looked at the verse and it said, beware of false teachers and people who will come in from amongst you will say that they're the Christ and so forth. And Paul warns of people saying that they were the Christ. And I said that we even have that today. We have people who are coming, they're saying that they're the Christ, they're the false messiahs, people are following them to their death, and so forth. So that was during their lifetime, but also continues on until today. Now here, when we enter into the tribulation, what we will see, rumors of wars, kingdom against kingdom. Well, there's going to be a silence for a short time. There's going to be a peace that the false prophet, the false Christ will set up, and they'll set up a peace treaty with Israel and so forth. So there'll be a time that seems peaceful. No more rumors of wars for a period of 3.5 years, and we're not going to get into that. But that takes place. Now look at verses 7 and 8. This we looked at last week. But when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be troubled, for such things must happen. But the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be earthquakes in various places, and there will be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. But the end is not yet. What is the end? End of what? End of troublesome times. The climax to Christ's second coming. The end is not yet. There's more to come. There's going to be rumors of wars. There's going to be earthquakes. There are going to be these things, but the end has not yet come. It says, these are the beginnings of sorrows. Last week I said that the beginnings of sorrows was like a pregnant woman who is about to give labor. Beginning of sorrows is like Braxton Hicks. The pains begin slowly, but the severe pain is yet to come. Well, these troublesome times, these times of wars and rumors of wars and all these things that are going to take place before these things through our lifetimes are just Braxton Hicks. They aren't the bad. They aren't the severe. Look, if you will, at verse 19. For in those days there will be tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor will be. This is the full-blown labor. This is no longer the Braxton Hicks. This is the full-blown labor. The group that thinks Jesus was telling them that they would witness this in their lifetime believes that this happened during the tearing down of the temple in AD 70. The group that believes that Jesus was telling the disciples that the abomination of desolation and all these things that were going to happen, the terrible times, was going to happen during the consuming of the city, the destruction of the temple in AD 70. But there are two questions that have to be asked in reference to a second coming. Did the disciples witness any tribulation greater than any other since the beginning of the earth? In other words, at their time, when they were still alive in their lifetime, did they witness anything, any tribulation, any severity that would equal or be greater than any other time before then? Second, did Jesus come back in their lifetime and set up his kingdom? See, both those questions are in this passage. It says in verse 19 that there was going to be greater trouble than ever since the beginning of the earth. until the point of the tribulation. There hasn't been. That not in their lifetime. And the second thing is we know that Jesus didn't come back and set up their kingdom. What are they going to do? They're going to have to use symbolism. They're going to have to use metaphors. Or they're going to have to spiritualize Jesus coming back. Well, he set up his kingdom in our hearts is usually what they say. Well, no. Jesus came back literally the first time. He's coming back literally the second time. Jesus did not come back and set up his kingdom. This event is still yet to come. You know, I'd love to go through the books of Daniel, Ezra, Matthew, and Revelation and unfold these events as they would happen. But of course, it is not possible, for we just don't have the time to do that. But in Sunday school, after hermeneutics, we will start our theology again, and we will study eschatology, the study of end times. Right? I got to point to Ryan every single time because he's our theological genius, and he's going to tell us what these words mean. But eschatology, the study of end times, we will get there and we will go through these things in detail. Well, let us look at our text starting with verse 14. So the time frame isn't within the lifetime of the disciples. It hasn't been in the lifetime of us as of yet. There's still future. Verse 14, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. The disciples would have understood exactly what Jesus is referring to when he refers to the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel. Daniel spoke of the abomination of desolation three times in his book. The first time in Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. The second time in chapter 11, verse 31. And the third time in chapter 12, verse 1. Now, if you look at chapter 12, verse 1, it just says troublesome times or something. It doesn't say abomination of desolation. But we know that's what it means. And perhaps, and I didn't look this up, that's what it means in Aramaic as well. Because I think Daniel was written in Aramaic, if not Hebrew. Now, as you study this event, you will discover that Daniel made it clear that the Jewish people were being punished for their sins, for their shortcomings, for their disobedience. And the time frame of their punishment was going to be for 70 weeks or for 490 years. Now, this is how the Jewish people, how this occurred. The number seven was big within the Jewish culture, their history. And 1 week was equal to 7 years. 70 weeks is times 7 years would be 490 years. So Israel was going to be punished for 490 years. Now, well, Daniel, when Daniel prophesied, he said that they were going to endure 69 weeks, 483 years, they were going to be punished before the prince came. And the prince is referring to Jesus Christ. So for 69 weeks or 483 years, Israel was going to endure turmoil, punishment, before the Messiah came. Well, then they were going to endure another 7 years or another week, 70th week of Daniel, at some future point. And it is this point that Jesus is referring to. He is referring to the tribulation, the abomination of desolation, is a reference to the 70th week that God is going to deal with his people Israel. So the Jews were very aware, his disciples were very aware of what he was talking about when he was referring to the abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel. And you can find this in the context of chapter 9, Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. Are you confused yet? A little bit? It's hard to stay with. It really is. And I'm not trying to confuse you. All I'm trying to say is they understood. They understood because they knew their history. They knew that they were punished. They're still being punished at this point anyway, not now. But they're still being punished. Well, they are now too, but the time that the Romans were ruling the government, when they were the ruling government, they were still under captivity is what I'm saying. So they were still being punished, but not as severe as they were when they were taken by Babylon. Here's something else that is interesting about this verse. It says, let the reader understand. Mark isn't recording what Jesus said. In other words, Jesus didn't say, let the reader understand. What the book of Mark is a narrative. It's a story. It's history. And Mark is the narrator. He is the one that is telling the story. So sometimes in your Bibles, you will see red And that's when Jesus spoke. But in the black is what Mark is recording as far as history goes. So when it says, let the reader understand what it's in between the red. So Jesus is speaking, but Mark is saying, let the reader understand. If Jesus was speaking to the disciples, he would have said what he said in verse 6. Hear. It says in verse 6, when you hear. But it doesn't say that. And it's not written in red, so Jesus must not have said it. Well, we know he didn't say it. It was written by Mark, and he says, let the readers understand. In other words, let those who I intend to write to, who I'm writing to, understand when they read this book. So what he is saying is those who read this book, I want you to understand that when the abomination of desolation happens, take heed. Be aware. Look, if you will, at verses 15 through 18. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter. In verse 14, he says, those in Judea flee to the mountains. We didn't cover that in just the previous verse, but I wanted to bring that out. Those in Judea flee to the mountains. And in these verses, he tells them not to go down into their house, not to go back from their fields to gather anything from their house. Just run. Don't worry about your clothes. Don't worry about getting enough food. Don't worry about getting a coat. Don't grab your sandals if you don't have any. Just run. Run for the hills. The Braxton Hicks are over, and the labor is come full force. Just run. Speaking of birth, Jesus says, woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. If you are pregnant or nursing a baby, it will be extremely difficult for you and your baby to survive during this time. We have read things or watched documentaries about the Holocaust. There were some horrific things that were done to pregnant women as experiments. They killed the babies. They were just horrendous, horrendous events that happened. Well, this is going to be the same type of thing if they catch these women, these Jewish women. It's talking about the Jewish women here. But I'm sure it's going to be anybody who doesn't take the mark of the beast. And of course, we know that flight here doesn't mean hopping on a plane. It's talking about running for your life, giving it all you have. Many people say that there isn't any God because if there were, God would never allow such things to happen today. Why would a loving God allow natural disasters, sicknesses, wars, and so much death? Well, if they think the world is a rough place now, they haven't seen anything yet. Look, if you will, at verses 19 and 20. For in those days there will be tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. Such as had not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. The disciples were aware of their history. They understood that they were Israelites, that they were Jews. They knew their forefathers, their patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. They understood their history. They understood that they were slaves for over 400 years in Egypt and that their lives were a mess, that there was just tremendous turmoil, that there was persecution, death, that they were treated wrongly. They understood that during the wilderness wandering for over 40 years, thousands of people died for being disobedient to God. They understood that they were still being oppressed by those who held or were sovereign over them. They understood that their cities were demolished in 586 BC and 720, I believe it is, BC. And that Babylon came in and destroyed them, wiped them out, and took them captive. They killed everybody that could not make the trip. And anyone that they thought was possible to make the trip, they died on their way to Babylon. They understood their history. But I think the thing that stuck out the most was what? Noah's flood. Noah's flood. I think they understood. I think the thing that popped into their head, first thing that popped into my head, was Noah's flood. If this is going to be worse than any time from the beginning of history, from the beginning of creation until at least their point, was the flood event. And there has never been a time like the flood event. There has never been a time where such chaos and upheaval was happening. The tribulation is going to be more severe than what happened during the flood. We have seen some good earthquakes in our days. We have witnessed Mount St. Helens erupt and the tornadoes that just hit the south, tear apart homes and leave people with nothing. Matter of fact, they said that the tornadoes that hit down south was the worst on record. There is flooding going on all over the United States. And these things are nothing. They're like child's play compared to what is going to happen during the tribulation. They say that the earth didn't have mountains before the flood. The mountains were a result of the flood. That the plates just came together and just rose up. And we know this is true because they have found marine fossils on the top of the highest mountains. How do you do that unless there were marine animals living where the mountains or the grounds of those mountains were? They had to have been lower at some point. As I said earlier, I don't have time to show you everything that will occur during the last days. But if you are interested in getting a better picture of what these last days are going to look like, what they are going to be like, the amount of deaths that are going to happen, and how they are going to happen, I recommend that you read chapters 6 through 19 of Revelation, and you will get a better picture of what will take place in the last day. It is so bad that Jesus said in verse 20 that no flesh would be saved unless God shortened these days. And this brings out another point that is crucial to remember. When we read this about the events concerning the tribulation, it is easy to think it is the devil's doing because it talks about false prophets, the beast, and the Antichrist. But it really is the wrath of God that is occurring at this time. And the false Christ, the beast, and the prophets are just pawns in the hands of God. God is going to allow them to do what they are going to do as punishment on his people. And what we must remember is that the first 69 weeks or the first 483 years that Israel was punished, they were punished by Babylon. But when you read the account, you will understand, you will discover that it is God who allowed these people to come in. It always has been God. Who gave God the victories when they were moving through from district to district or from country to country as they were making their way to the promised land? It was always God. When they're being punished, they are punished by God, and God uses people like Nineveh or Babylon, Rome, Greece, the Medo-Persians to punish his people. And it's no different here. We can focus and say it's the devil. The devil's doing this. No, the devil's not doing this. God is allowing him to do what he's doing. And this time is going to be horrendous. Verse 20 mentions the elect, and some think that this is referring to the church. It isn't referring to the church because the church is raptured prior to the tribulation. You read 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, you will see that we are kept from this time of wrath. Christ paid the wrath for us. Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. The wrath has been paid. God is not going to punish the church through this time. The church is raptured. The elect during the tribulation is referring to those who have become his during the tribulation. They are not part of the church. The church is raptured. The church is done. It's complete. The people that are spoken of as elect here are speaking of those who come to Christ during the tribulation. Look, if you will, at verses 21 and 22. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or look, he is there, do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. As has been said many times, the devil hates God and anything associated with God. He hates God's people. And he will do anything he can to get at God. As I've said, I think I've said before, you can do whatever you want to me, but if you really want to get to me, attack my family. If you really want to hurt me, attack my family. Well, and the same thing is true here. What is different here than the earlier verse referring to the warnings of false Christs in chapter 6 is that these false Christs will be permitted, allowed to do supernatural miracles. And that is to do so to be deceptive, to trick the people. Again, not to be redundant, but the primary focus of the tribulation is Israel. Remember, it's the 70th week. It's Jacob's trouble. It's dealing with Israel primarily, even though the whole earth will be punished. The focal point of God is Israel. 69 weeks have already passed. 483 years have already passed. There's still 1 week to go to complete the 70th week. 7 more years, the tribulation. So the focus is Israel. Israel always looked for signs. So when these people come, these false Christs, and they do these signs, they're going to be fooled into thinking that the false Christ is the true Christ. You know, I don't know how the elect isn't deceived. I don't know if it's some miraculous power by God that just doesn't allow it to happen. Some think so. I don't know if they have copies of the entire Bible after we're raptured, and they come across these after, and they read, and they understand that there is going to be a false Christ before the true Christ comes. Perhaps. I don't know if it's going to be the two witnesses or the 144,000 witnesses that explain these truths to the true believers before they are martyred for their faith. I'm not sure. What I do know is that one way or another, God protects his people. God protects his people. A lot of information. Where is the application? Well, the application is found in verse 23. But take heed. See, I have told you all things beforehand. Jesus sends this bad news of a dreadful time, with what they are expected to do. They may not have known it at this time, but by the time of the resurrection, or just after the resurrection, they were fully aware of what they were to do. Take heed means to be watchful, and they knew what to be watchful for. You see, Jesus could have come back during their lifetime. The Lord's second coming is imminent, which means at any moment. Jesus could come back at any moment. When Paul taught, he taught as if Christ could come back then. All throughout history, preachers teach that Christ could come back at any time. A matter of fact, Christ could come back, and we're almost done with this message, but Christ could come back before this message is over. The return of Christ is imminent. All Christians at all times are encouraged to live for Christ always. Seeing that Jesus could come back during their lifetime, what were they expected to do? Seeing that Jesus could come back in our lifetime, we are readers. Let the reader understand. Seeing that Jesus could come back in our lifetime, what are we expected to do? Evangelize. We are expected to evangelize. Jesus gave them the Great Commission, and the commission was then given to us as we will pass it on to the next generation. If we believe that every word is inspired by God, then we believe that these things could happen within our lifetime. We believe that we could go from the Braxton Hicks into the tribulation at any moment. Of course, the rapture will happen before that for us. But those who are alive on this earth today, those who we know, could endure the tribulation. They could endure the tribulation. Listen to Paul's testimony before he dies. Acts chapter 20, verses 25 through 27. And indeed, now I know that you all, among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God, will see my face no more. He's about to die. Therefore, I testify, or this is my testimony, I testify to you that this day I am innocent of all the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God. What Paul is saying is that everywhere I went, I proclaimed Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ crucified. What is it that we are to walk away with today? Well, the same thing that the disciples were to walk away with, and that was the urgency of proclaiming the wrath of God to come. All they have to do is accept their Son, and they too will be raptured. For the wrath of God fell on Christ. We don't have to endure it. We won't as believers. But those around us will not have to endure it if we share the gospel. Paul's testimony is, I am free from the blood of all men. I would love this to be my testimony. Wouldn't you? Let's pray.